Hey, welcome. I'm Chris Lopez, host of the Valley Pod, where we talk to all the interesting people of the San Luis Valley. With us today in our studio on the south side of Alamosa is Flora Archuleta, Executive Director of the San Luis Valley Immigrant Resource Center. Flora, it's good to see you. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. We're looking forward to having a conversation with you and learning a lot more about the work you do on behalf of immigrants in the San Luis Valley. And just give us a sense of your caseload these days and the services you provide on a daily basis for immigrants here in the San Luis Valley.
Okay, so we have three programs that are active. And so we have the immigration legal assistance that has been going on for the 22 years, actually. And so that's still in place. And then we have the Por Ti Misma Assisting Battered Immigrants, where we provide legal services, rental, utility, and emergency assistance to crime victims, mm-hmm. Immigrant crime victims. Mm-hmm. And then we have our education outreach program, where we provide English as a second language to adults. And we also have our after-school tutoring program at Tierra Nueva, where we provide assistance to kids, you know, doing their homework, reading, whatever, you know, kind of more like, a place for them, a safe place for them to go and be after school.
So you're in a variety of different programs at the Immigrant Resource Center. Give us a sense of how big your clientele is or what that clientele looks like these days.
Okay, well, so I have a huge clientele, and because we not only service people here in the San Luis Valley, I have clients from across the state of Colorado. Sometimes they come even from New Mexico. I've had some come in from Kansas. And the reason that they do that is because we're a nonprofit, so we charge minimal for our services, if anything, because if somebody doesn't have the ability to pay, they're not charged. But for example, say a family petition, an immigration attorney can charge $10,000 to $15,000. We can charge maybe $2,000 to $2,500.
Gotcha.
So that's a big difference.
Do you see your clientele or that population, has it stagnated over the past period of years, or do you see an influx of new immigrants? What is that population of immigrants that you serve, that you see, that you're aware of? What does that look like in 2023?
For us, it's here. It's a steady. We haven't seen much new immigrants. Those that are coming in, maybe from Venezuela and from Cuba, are just kind of, if they're coming into the valley, as soon as they're released by ICE, they seem to be moving on to the bigger cities. Maybe, they're headed to Denver or another state. Mm-hmm. But the clientele that we have seems pretty steady. People that have been here for 20, 30 years, maybe even longer.
Mm-hmm. So it's an older population and probably getting older.
Yes, a lot of them are, yes. Getting a lot older. I've known some of the people that I've worked with probably for, 30 years or better. Because yeah. I've lived in the community pretty much all my life.
You know, when you talk a little bit about Venezuelans, Cubans, and they're coming in, recently we've seen that at the El Paso border, the El Paso-Mexico, Ciudad Juarez border. As you see those immigrants coming through or passing through, what's that like in terms of how they come in and then how they're moving on? What's that typical travel or that typical experience like that you are aware of or see?
So for the new immigrants, I met with the ICE officer here a while back, and so we talked about that. And so basically, he's by himself. So it's basically just they're being processed and, given just that they'll have to appear in court later, and then they're just released and they're, let go. Mm-hmm. So, and like I said, once people realize from Venezuela or, Cuba or any, there's no work really here for them. So they're going to be moving on to another city where they can find work.
Mm-hmm. When you think of work, there was the recent closure of the mushroom plant here in Alamosa, the mushroom farm. And I know that impacted immigrants, workforce. What is that result of that closure? What has the fallout been for the mushroom farm itself, for those workforce, for those workers, for that immigrant population? How have they been affected by the closure of the mushroom farm?
Well, it affected probably a little over 100 families that were working there, you know, towards the end. So a lot of people are still struggling to find work because a lot of the people that were working at the mushroom farm are undocumented.
Gotcha.
So they're struggling because other employers aren't willing to take the risk of hiring undocumented. And the other thing that we've noticed is a lot of people do not have the means to travel to Monta Vista, Center, Blanca, you know, to the potato warehouses where the majority of the immigrant population works.
Mm-hmm.
So they're struggling with that in finding other employment. A lot of them have secured, you know, employment and are starting to work. There's still a few that are really struggling. We've been assisting people in paying their rent, utility bills, and food. We've been giving out approximately 60 boxes of food per month, maybe even more, depending on the need, you know. And especially now with the winter bills, with some of these bills are coming in at $500-$600. And when people aren't working, it's, you know, we don't want people to be without heat. And so we've been very fortunate that some funders have given us money to be able to assist.
Where does your funders come from, or how do you access money revenue so that you can support and help, whether they're undocumented, whether they're green card immigrants? How do you find the funders to help support what you provide as a service? How does that work for the Immigrant Resource Center?
Okay, so since we're a 501c3 nonprofit, we can, so I do a lot of grant writing, and so secure a lot of grants from, most of them are from outside the valley, you know. We have funding from, for example, the Colorado Health Foundation, the Caring for Colorado Foundation, the Colorado Trust, and other, you know, funders that have provided AJL Foundation, Latino Community Foundation. So a lot of them have been really generous in helping. They know that the need is there, and the word has gotten out, which is great. You know, and so people say, we don't want people to be homeless or without heat. And so we've been very fortunate with that.
If you imagine that the Immigrant Resource Center does not exist, that you weren't there to provide the different services that you've articulated, whether it's support for children, whether it's assistance. What if the Immigrant Resource Center wasn't there? What would the picture look like here in the Valley for immigrants, or just in general without the Immigrant Resource Center there?
And we've talked about this because some of the people come in here and say, we don't know what we would do without you if you were here. And I laugh because a while back, we closed the office to attend a training, and we were closed for a couple of days. And a woman came in on a Monday morning, and she was crying. She says, I thought you guys were gone, and we didn't have any more assistance. You know, it was like, what are we going to do if you weren't here? Mm-hmm. So I really, you know, it would be difficult because, like I said, we've been here there now almost. We celebrated our 20th anniversary as a nonprofit, but we've actually been in the building because we were there like a couple of years before we applied for our nonprofit, so about 22 years.
Mm-hmm. What is that main, when you think of the different services you're providing, what is the main service that they're looking for, that immigrants are looking for coming to you for?
The legal assistance. Everybody comes in or calls on a daily basis. They say, I have a question. Well, it turns into a consultation, a legal consultation, because it's more than just a question, you know. Mm-hmm. This is what's going on with me, or, you know, is there anything that I can apply? Can I apply for a work permit? When, you know, I just got married. Can I, you know, can my husband apply for me, or can my wife apply? You know, there's just, so I do that on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hey, we're talking to Flora Archuleta. She's with the Immigrant Resource Center. This is the Valley Pod. We'll be right back.
You can support the work of AlamosaCitizen.com by becoming a member or by donating today. We have no out-of-town shareholders or billionaire owners. We are 100% San Luis Valley. Go to AlamosaCitizen.com and hit Become a Member, or give anything that you can. We appreciate it.
Hey, we're back. We're with Flora Archuleta with the Immigrant Resource Center in Florida. You were talking about the closure of the mushroom farm, which happened in 2022, and they've been having challenges at the mushroom farm for, you know, a period of years, I think. But there's been some also reports that workforce may be trying to think about how do they reopen it? How do they create a co-op possibly? What can you tell us about that strategy or that potential of what people are thinking there when it comes to the mushroom farm, trying to get it operational again?
So we've been in contact with an organization out of Denver. And so we'll be having a meeting with the community on Saturday at the Boyd School from 2 to 4. The woman came in, Minsoon came in, I think it was the end of November, and did a survey. And so we have the results from the survey of people, whether people are interested in forming their own co-op. And it would be a community-owned mushroom farm, if that were the case. And I'm not too familiar with it, so I'm learning as well as a community with this, you know. But it sounds like a good idea because there appears to be a lot of people interested in investing in the community, if that is where the community wants to go. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be finding out more on Saturday how people want to go proceed with this.
And is that interest in possibly reactivating the mushroom farm? Why is that? Is it because of the amount of labor that it takes to run that mushroom farm? Is it because of the operations and the need for mushrooms and how successful that was in terms of turning out mushrooms for the U.S. as a whole, for food consumption? Why do you think there's such a strong interest in continuing or trying to restart or re-up operations at the mushroom farm here?
Well, it was good for the entire community, for mm-hmm. the entire San Luis Valley. It employed, at one time when the mushroom farm started, it was employing, I think, almost 200 people. Now, towards the end, it was still employing half, probably close to 100. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at that many people, it's good for revenue for the community. It people have jobs, and it's security for the community. And then this would be community-based. It would not be owned or operated by the current owners or another owner. This would be owned, is my understanding, by the workers themselves.
There's a lot of pride among the workers at the mushroom farm, the company that owned it to the side, and however they ran it to the side. There was a lot of pride in that workforce, yeah?
Yes, people take pride on, and some of them have worked there since it first started in the mid-1990s and worked all the way through now. So the experience that these people have and the dedication that they put into this, they have, you know, and the pride that they took in their work, because not very many people can do the kind of work that they did.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we want to talk a little bit more about agriculture and the agricultural industry and how it's affected by immigrants, about that workforce. What do you think the agricultural industry, how much do you think it relies on immigrant workforce, whether it's undocumented or documented? And what can you tell us about what that scene looks like today when you think of ag workers, when you think of San Luis Valley agriculture and how dependent it is or isn't on that workforce that you serve?
Well, the agricultural businesses are totally dependent, from what I've seen, on immigrants. Without immigrants, they will not be able to survive, because I get a lot of phone calls also from farmers, and people needing workers. And I know, like during the pandemic, they were hurting for people, and they just did not have the workforce. And I really believe that if it wasn't for immigrants that wanted to work or willing to work these jobs in the potato warehouses, they're not easy jobs. But these people like to want to work. They work, mm-hmm. and they don't mind working 12, 14-hour days, 6 days a week. Most other people say, no, I'm working 8 to 5, Monday through Friday or whatever. So it's a totally different workforce that I think a lot of people are not familiar with and are not willing to work. And mm-hmm. if it weren't for immigrants, we wouldn't have that.
How much do you think the Valley as a whole relies on immigrant labor? Whether it's agriculture, whether it's the service industry, we talked about the mushroom farm a bit. Where do you think we are as a Valley when it comes to relying or being dependent on an immigrant workforce?
I think more and more, as you see, more businesses are relying on immigrant, especially because a lot of these people are fluent, maybe in 2 languages, maybe 3 languages. And so more employers are looking for that diversity and being able to communicate with other people. And so I see that the need is there.
Uh-huh. At one point, the Valley, with its agriculture, I think probably used more immigrant workforce than it does today. That's just me thinking back through the 70s, through the 60s, through the 80s, when there was, I think, more agriculture happening in the valley. But I wonder, too, if that immigrant labor force, as it ages, and we don't necessarily see new immigrants coming in, or the valley as a destination the way it maybe at once was a destination because of the jobs, because of the agriculture industry. Do you think it's less of a destination, the valley, today? Do you think that immigrant workforce is aging for us, and how do we replace it or account for that?
Well, I see, as after talking to some of the, especially some of the potato warehouses, because they were hurting for people, they're starting to bring in immigrant workers on H-2A, H-2B visas, because they do not have the workforce needed, to run their businesses. So if we don't get, some type of immigration reform that allows people to legally work here or come in legally, I see more of that, that employers will have to rely on bringing workers from outside the country.
Mm-hmm. Do you see or hear anything about any movement toward immigration reform as a federal policy in this country?
Nothing at all. At this point, it doesn't appear that we're going to see anything under this administration, and with the Congress that we have, I don't have any hope. I was hoping that we would at least have something for our DACA recipients at this point, because there's still, I started working with DACA in 2012 when it was enacted, and there's still nothing. They only have work authorization, which is renewed every 2 years.
Interesting. Give us a sense, and we're going to let you go here in a bit, but give us a sense of the things you hear from immigrants, from people as they come in looking for your service, trying to figure out the lay of the land of the valley. What are the things you typically will hear when you're engaging with your clientele or just new people? What are those things that come up in those types of conversations?
That they're here basically for a better life for themselves and their children. A lot of them are fleeing from, war zones, the drug cartel in Mexico, Honduras, the gangs. They just want, they're afraid in their countries. If not, they wouldn't be here. They just want a better life.
Mm-hmm. And how do you respond? That must be, those are interesting conversations, I would suspect, as sometimes difficult conversations. And you as the executive director and your staff at the SLV Immigrant Resource Center, how are you able to respond to those types of conversations? What is it that, I'm sure you have to be very empathetic to them. How do you handle these types of conversations?
They're difficult, very difficult, because sometimes people will come in there in the office and there's nothing. There is no path. They have absolutely no avenue. We'll cry together. We'll laugh together. It depends. When people for the first time, like this week, we had a woman that I think it's taken her 9 years, and she finally got her resident card under the U visa.
Uh-huh.
And she was holding it, and it was like, is this real? Is this really real? So, we have those, it's got its days, some days are pretty sad, and then there's some that are very, so it just makes our job, just from a day to day.
What about younger people that are immigrant families, part of immigrant families? One of my takeaways that I've noticed in the last few years watching and hanging around the valley is, we definitely are relying on a kid workforce that is immigrant as well. And I wonder what you see there when it comes to younger people in the workforce, because I know that exists out of need, both for the family and for the business. Do you have a sense of how many kids are in the workforce in the valley that you're aware of, or at least can give us some sense of that?
Well, some have, as they graduate, some of them are leaving, the valley to seek other employment, go on to college or something like that. But I'm very fortunate. I have two immigrants, that one from Mexico and the other one, she was born here, but mm-hmm. to Guatemalan parents. And so I'm very fortunate to have two young girls that are awesome, One, bilingual, and the other one is trilingual. But the majority of the people that I know, they're just, they're looking for just a way to better themselves. They're not afraid of work, you know, so that gives me hope.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate all the work that you do. It's really interesting. And, you know, we want to note that I think the nonprofit, the SLV Immigrant Resource Center, has been around for 20 years now.
Actually 22. We celebrated 22. Our 20th year officially as a nonprofit, because it took us 2 years to, you know, by the time you apply with the Secretary of State and you get your 501c3 and all your paperwork in, you know. Yeah. But we, 20 years. Mm-hmm.
When you see that work moving forward, what are the things that you and your staff are focused on as you keep working ahead?
Well, as I look to retire here in the next few years, I'm hoping that, it will keep, at least the three programs that we have in because they've been there since we started the organization. And they seem to be very beneficial. You know, the legal assistance program is essential. The crime victim assisting crime victim immigrants, and then the education, because without the education and outreach for people, you know, people need the English language to be able to advance in this country. So I hope that can stay in place.
Yeah, no, that's really great work, and we're really interested in listening to everything that you guys are doing at the Immigrant Resource Center. Hey, you've been listening to The Valley Pod in our episode with Flora Archuleta. This episode of The Valley Pod is produced by Angel Rodriguez and is part of the AlamosaCitizen.com podcast lineup. We'll see you around the valley.